Sports Day for Kia. The new Kia Niro electric SUV range has landed. And Red Energy, awarded Canstar's most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021. That's Red Energy.
Well, I have to quarantine for 2 weeks. And just in the same way, a skilled worker who has to come in to fix a boiler or something like that, they can get exemptions to come in and do that. That's an important economic activity. And the same applies here. But they have to quarantine for those 2 weeks if you're unvaccinated.
You can come in if you're double vaccinated. If a state is seeking an exemption for somebody to come in for a workplace program or a similar event, if the state wishes to seek the exemption for the players, not any one particular player, then that would be granted at the Commonwealth level on a major events basis.
Well, I'm not applying for any exemptions for any unvaccinated players. So if we don't apply for an exemption, then no exemption will be granted. All I'd say is this: I'm not going to ask and actually require people sitting in the grandstand, people working at the event, to be vaccinated while players aren't. So we're not going to be applying for an exemption. So therefore, the issue is basically resolved.
8 minutes past six. Hello and welcome to Sports Day. The issue is resolved. That last bit coming from our Premier, Daniel Andrews. Matt Granlin, if I don't think I'd pay any money to watch a tennis match between Greg Hunt and Scott Morrison on one side of the net, Daniel Andrews and Brett Sutton on the other side of the net. In fact, you'd probably have to pay me to go and watch that game of tennis. But as far as a political game of tennis, it's been entertaining.
Absolutely. I think Dan was the one that served first and said, well, it's up to the feds. The feds said, yep, we'll let him in. And then back to Dan we go. And then he finished the game. It was...
No, you missed the little Sutton volley.
Oh, that's right. Sutton volley. And then he finished the game. It's done now. It's done. The cake's baked. The egg scrambled. Whatever metaphor you want to use, it's over.
So when you're saying it's over... So Novak
Dan just said it's over. It's been dealt with.
Novak isn't coming.
I don't think so. Well, if Novak isn't
vaccinated... Is there any loophole? Is there a way?
Well, we were talking about this off-air, about whether or not could maybe someone like Djokovic come into New South Wales, say, or quarantine in Sydney and then make their way down
to
Victoria.
And if the rule changes between coming into Victoria unvaccinated from a domestic, I mean, the thing is that, and we've said this every time, it can change, it's a moving beast, this whole COVID. It's, what are we now? We're October 26, 27. We've still got November, December, mid-January. We've got 2.5 months for more people to get vaccinated, for rules to change. Anyway, I mean, we've talked about tennis at the start all week. We're about to talk Demons. And we're about to chat to their CEO, Gary Pert.
Now, before we do that, though, Sam, I heard a podcast with Campbell Brown on it. Talking about a little fracas that happened at a nightclub after the grand final between the Melbourne players and the Western Bulldogs players. Now, you were over there, so I want you to have a listen to what Campbell Brown said. This is apparently what happened. Let's listen.
They're at this club. Level 3, doggies are level 2. Remember, they hate each other. They're hanging over the rails, giving it to the doggies boys, right? Getting real heated, real personal. You come down, we'll come up, right? We're going to fight
you. Halfway.
We'll meet you halfway, right? And it would have been unbelievable. Imagine that. Like the two teams that played in the grand final on the Saturday, punching on at a club on a Monday. It didn't come to blows. A player from Melbourne and a player from the Western Bulldogs that are best mates, used to live together, may still do. They met halfway between level 2 and level 3, right, in safe ground, and negotiated a peace treaty.
There's Campbell. Now, it sounds like a bit of mayo may have been put on this story. It sounds like a sportsman's night story that'll live on for years and years and years. But, Sam, you were over there. You were in Perth. You may have even been in this nightclub. Is there any truth? Did you hear anything about a fight, a potential fight between the Western Bulldogs and the Demons players? Come on. Did you hear anything?
Look, hand on heart, I was made aware of an incident at a nightclub midweek after the grand final.
Oh.
But I was told that it would petered out pretty quickly. And I'm a big believer, Matty, as you know, in stuff that happens when footballers are out and about should remain private until the public needs to be made aware of it. That is, if police get involved, if it affects anyone else at the club, if the club, impose sanctions, then it's fair game. Otherwise, you're a member of the public, out with your mates, enjoying your time. Anyway, I don't know what actually happened. I'm not sure if their CEO, Gary Pert, was actually at the nightclub with them. I would suggest not, Pertie, as we welcome you in. But any response to Campbell Brown's story?
Hey, Sam and Maddie. Well, I can guarantee you right up front, I wasn't at the nightclub.
Oh, that's disappointing.
That they were talking about. But no, from all my reports, it's absolutely blown out of all proportions. But like all these things, you don't like tipping water on them, because these are the stories that just keep on growing as the days go on. So, but unfortunately, this one was a bit of a beat up.
There will be a documentary at some point, Pertie, down the track, you know, 10 or 20 years down the track, and it'll all come out. All the names will come out.
10 or 20 years? Purdy's already commissioned the documentary. It's getting filmed next year.
And it'll be a sportsman's night story down the track. But anyway, Pertie, let's have a chat about the big celebration that you got planned. I think it's December 5, the date, yep, at the MCG. So have you worked out what it's going to look like?
Well, we've got a bit of an idea what it's going to look like, but again, it's all going to be shaped by the state government, and, you know, we'll be applying or in the process of applying to be allowed to have a crowd at the MCG and allow all our supporters to come along. It'll be the first chance we've had to get the players and the cup and get all together and celebrate, and, you know, it's going to be very exciting. But again, we do need to go through a little bit of process. We've asked everyone to keep that date spare. And as soon as we've got the details, we'll come out with them public. But it will be a ticketed event. It won't cost anything, but it'll be a ticketed event. I'm sure we'll be bound by some COVID guidelines about how everyone needs to behave and vaccinations, and we understand that. But we're all pretty excited about getting together.
Pertie, can I give you an idea for it? Because I'm an ideas man. I reckon what you should do is, right, get all the fans there, replay the whole game again on the big screen, and then reenact the cup presentation. Bring out the dais.
Oh, I like it.
Bring Gary Lyon back to present the cup. Get the players up to get their
Craig
medals.
Get
Craig Willis out of retirement. Basil Zemplis, we won't fly him back over to the MCG. Goody can have his speech finally. He can say thank you. Just reenact the whole thing.
Well, Matty, I might put you on our little working party on that one. I think that's a good idea. But Goody was very excited to do his speech and thank all the key people. So this could be the big opportunity. But rest assured, for the supporters coming along, the players will be represented. And I would suggest Gary Lyon will be there doing exactly what he did over in Perth. And there'll be plenty of speeches, and you'll get to hear from the players, and there'll be entertainment up on the big screen, just like you're talking about. It's going to be a fun day, and like I said, we'll want all the supporters to come along, especially the families and the kids. First time to see the cup and experience this this premiership celebration. So the 5th of December.
The 5th of December, Gary's a Sunday. I tell you what it would do, Matty, is that it would give all those Melbourne fans a chance to pack down Swan Street on the way out, and people pouring out of the corner hotel, red and blue everywhere. It'd be this mini sort of grand final feel to it.
Fantastic.
In December. How good would that be? And it'd be better weather as well. Hey, Pertie, can we just ask you, now that the dust has settled on what was a momentous occasion for your proud footy club, what does it do for you heading into next year, sponsorship-wise, membership-wise? It feels like this club has been a sleeping giant for so long. We saw what happened to Richmond when they broke through and won a flag, and now they've got more than 100,000 members. I'm not sure. You tell me if the Demons are capable of getting to those heights. But there are a lot of Melbourne fans who will be brought out because of this.
Yeah, I don't think I'm careful to use terms like sleeping giant, but there's no doubt that as a club, we haven't had ongoing on-field success. So we're, let's say, a small version of ourselves of what we're capable of being. And,
yep,
and the Demon spirit has been reignited. And you've only got to go around Melbourne. You guys are over there in Perth, and we saw it in Adelaide, wherever we played. There's a lot of excitement. There's a lot of Melbourne supporters. There's a lot of people up and about and wanting to, like you said, sign up for memberships, come along to the games, make sure they're at the events. They're all wearing the colours around. I love the fact that even though the game's over, I still every single day see people wearing their Melbourne gear around. They're feeling very proud at the moment. So it'll be interesting the next 12 months to see what the club is capable of swelling to. And that's why we want to have the first game of the year to be a replay of the grand final, because we want to see not only the Melbourne supporters but the Bulldog supporters as well come along to the MCG and actually experience the two teams that are both, you know, in they've got very talented young groups, and hopefully they're going to be continue their success next year. But in some ways it's been so long, we don't know how quickly that momentum will grow, but we'll certainly be doing a lot of work to be the biggest and strongest version of ourselves. And the Melbourne Footy Club has been, you know, one of the powerhouse clubs for a long time. And now there's a lot of excitement. Like I said, that demon spirit certainly back and around the place, which is a lot of fun.
What's a premiership worth revenue-wise, Purdy? Can you put a number on it when you combine all the merchandise that you sell off the back of it, membership next year, all the corporate packages you'll sell off the back of it? Can you put a number on it?
Oh, look, well, if we hadn't have played in the finals and won the grand final, we wouldn't have made a profit this year. We probably would have at best broke even. And we might end up around about the $1.5 to $2 million this year. And then next year, as hopefully the membership grows and we play in some big blockbuster games and the supporters come along and want to be part of it, there's a chance that there's probably another $2 million upside next year. And these are all really important numbers for us, because we're coming off the back of 2 years of the pandemic where we've been really, you know, smashed financially to the figure of around about $8 million. So it's coming at an important time.
Gary Pert is the Melbourne CEO, the Premiership CEO, and he joins us live on Sports Day. Gary, what was the ticketed event? What was it for, Matty? A regional tour that was going around?
It was a private company, I think, that put it on, Purdy.
Okay, it was $149 for a ticket, $499 for a family pass. I think they were promising... was it the coach was going to be there? Some players as well?
A replica cup, yeah. Are you involved in that at all?
Look, it's one of those ones that are a little bit frustrating, I've got to say. Is during this period when the players and coaches finish at the end of the year, they have a period when, you know, they have time off and they have a break. During that time, it's very difficult for us to be getting the cup out and about to our supporters, which in the next couple of days we're going to be launching our national tour of the cup. We want to make sure that we get it to every supporter nationally that wants to be there, get a photo, see the cup. We'll be starting off the first stage of that in Metro Melbourne and regional Victoria because of border restrictions. But eventually as things open up, it'll be going to all the supporter groups around Australia. But there are commercial operations that have produced replica or in effect fake premiership cups, and they're paying players and coaches and others to go along, and it's a commercial operation. It's nothing to do with the club.
Would you prefer them not to, though, Gary? Would you prefer the players to say no?
Oh, look, the AFL industry is such that there's a lot of commercial operations that work on the edge of the industry, and you know, it's one of those things that for us, we want to make sure that every Melbourne supporter can see and experience the cup for free. In fact, our national tour will probably cost around $100,000 by the time it's finished. I do struggle with the fact that the commercial operations, that's exactly what they are, and unfortunately we feel a lot of questions and calls and emails and messages that come through to the club, the Melbourne Footy Club, answering about what is, you know, two or three that I know of commercial ventures that are operating at the moment.
And can Melbourne fans pencil in that first Friday night of round one? Have you heard back from the AFL for the grand final rematch?
Oh, look, it's a bit early yet, but, we've spoken to the AFL. I think I spoke to Travis Old by about 9 o'clock the morning after the grand final to say, look, this is something that I think would be good, not only for Melbourne supporters, but I think would be good for the AFL and just people generally in Melbourne to have a game to look forward to. And like I said, it's pretty simple for us. We want an opportunity to say thanks to our supporters. So many of them would have loved to have been in there, or they would love to have us have been back in Melbourne at the MCG after waiting so long to watch that premiership win. But it's our chance to say thanks and for the players to put on another show and represent the club similar to what they did in the grand final.
Will you be strong again next season?
Well, we hope so. We're a very young list. I mean, you look at a lot of our players that played in that grand final were some of our best players. They've still got 10 years of footy ahead of them.
Yep.
So we would like to say, like to think that, you know, if we can keep the list fit, and there's certainly so much talent in this, and a lot of the talent has got, you know, years of growth in it. So we think it's a pretty exciting time. And like I said, in the life cycle of our list, most of those players are a long way from hitting their peak yet. So that's pretty exciting in itself.
Gary, it's been a pretty exciting and a pretty special time for your great footy club. Even in my suburb of Richmond, it's hard to walk past a house without red and blue coming out. I mean, it's only, we're about to go into November, so there might be a couple of knocks on doors to take them down pretty soon, but it's been a long time coming, so maybe they deserve it. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Purdy.
Great. Thanks, guys. Appreciate your support.
Gary Peart there, the Melbourne CEO. Okay, so December 5, that'll be pretty special. Ticketed events, not going to cost anything. They'll pack out.
Absolutely.
They'll get a big crowd there. I don't know how many. I've no idea, but I assume they'll get more than 60.
You reckon 60? Wow.
Am I completely overestimating that?
Well,
Melbourne fans, 133693. Is every single Melbourne fan that lives in Victoria getting a free ticket to December 5, Sunday, December 5?
And what do you want the day to look like? You heard my idea.
Yep. And if you're not going, why not? 133693. More sports after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy and the new Kia Niro. Forgot you. We're not going to forget about this horse anytime soon. The $2 favourite for the Victoria Derby on the weekend, Matty, is on course to try to become the first three-year-old to win the Melbourne Cup in 80 years.
Mm. And the jockey is in very good form himself.
Oh, talk about good form. Daniel Moore spent two decades trying to win a Group 1 race, and then this spring he's gone 3 in 4 weeks.
Bang. Bang, bang, and bang again.
When it rains, it pours. Welcome to you, Daniel Moore.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Great to have you on. What do you put the quick turnaround into success down to, I guess?
Fast horses, I think.
It's got to be a bit more than that, Daniel. Give yourself some credit.
Yeah, I guess just a few more opportunities sort of bobbed up and sort of things falling your way a little bit. I'd sort of ridden a domestic Group 1 winner overseas in Mauritius, but it was yet to break the duck here, and it was nice to knock it off and get on somewhat of fun.
And how are you handling it, Daniel? I mean, if you were a young bloke, you'd probably be out celebrating and all the rest of it, but, you know, all the success coming at such a quick time, how are you handling it as a sort of an older jockey?
Yeah, sort of business as usual, really. I guess COVID sort of restrictions helped that along as well. I had lunch with my wife on Monday, and it was pretty quiet. We had to pick up the kids from school afterwards. So, yeah, it's been business as usual. And I sort of knew that I had some reasonable rides sort of penned in early doors. So, it's a busy time of year, and you've sort of got to be focused up and you're most dedicated this time of year.
Can you tell us a little bit about Forgot You, Daniel? And the son of Savabeel, obviously, as we talked about, a $2 favourite, and for a three-year-old has just so many plaudits for it.
Yeah, he's a lovely, lovely style of horse. He, as a young horse, he sort of wanted to get on with things and was a bit aggressive. He wanted to pull and reef and tear, and the team have done a great job. Vicky White, that rides in work, has really helped us out in getting him to settle and switch off, and he's sort of actually gone the other way now, where he takes a bit of stoking up, but for a horse that's sort of bred to stay and get over ground, that's what you want. You don't want them to be aggressive. You want them to conserve as much as they can and come with a turn of foot. But he's handling things okay at the moment as a three-year-old. He's had a big, long preparation. And win, lose or draw on Saturday, he'll be a much, much better horse next preparation and possibly with the addition of Blinkers.
Who's the major threat in the race, do you think, Daniel? Is it Gunstock?
Three-year-old races, just they really aren't cut and dry, especially when we're getting up to Derby distances. Like, you know, people can tell you until they're black and blue in the face that their horse will run the trip, but they won't know until Saturday, you know. So you've got a lot of different form lines coming through. You've got the Geelong Classic form lines. You've got some Kiwi horses coming, some Sydney horses, and obviously lightly sort of raced horses. So, you know, it's a big melting pot of form and sort of form lines coming into it. I'm respecting a lot of those horses that have got exposed form at the moment, but Derbies can be won by horses out of the blue. So all I can focus on is my bloke and getting the right run in transit.
Daniel, we spend a lot of time on this show in footy season, you know, talking to footballers ahead of big games and ahead of big fortnights, ahead of big final series and how they handle nerves. Do you get nervous before a ride? And do those nerves increase before a ride like Saturday?
I don't think you get nervous. You sort of just want to get on with the job and you know, once you're out there and involved and on the horse, it's sort of most of your thoughts sort of go away. But you'd be lying if you didn't have a level of anxiousness and wanting to, well, that's not really a word, but anxiousness and wanting to get on with the job. But I'd say it's not really nervous energy, it's just excitement and wanting to get on with it. But obviously, you know, I'm not a veteran yet, but I'm a little bit older and had a bit of experience here and there. So just taking it as it comes.
And you credited fast horses at the start as, you know, the form you're in. I mean, can you be in good form as a jockey? Can you just can it just be flowing well for you?
Yeah, I think, most definitely. Obviously, when you're in form, your instinct takes over a little bit. You ride a little bit more on instinct rather than trying too hard to make something work that's not happening. I speak to Mick Dibman a lot. He was a great help to me in Singapore when I rode in Singapore. And he was obviously a freak jockey himself, and he just basically said, you know, you've got to just ride on instinct. And you can sort of ride your way into form, and you can also ride your way out of form. You can sort of go around a little bit too much and sort of blow yourself up. That's why I sort of take breaks now and sort of focus on family and things like that. But no, definitely, when you're in form, things generally happen a little bit more often and you get luck rather than bad luck.
Who are you most nervous about for your three Group 1 races on Saturday?
I guess the most level of anxiety expectation is on Forgot You. Obviously, everyone's expecting him to win, but like I said, we've got a few sort of hurdles to get over and it'll be interesting to see how the race pans out. But it's more excitement for all three rides. I'd love to see my old girl, Sierra Sue, bounce back from...
Yeah.
Get an atrial fibrillation her last start, so that can be forgiven. She's got a really nice gate too. She's going to get a great run, so I'd really like to see her bounce back. Obviously, riding for Godolphin in great shouting is a really, it's an exciting time and it's a horse in good form. So, yeah, it's going to be a big day and I'll be looking forward to sitting down and having a stubby afterwards on Saturday night, I can tell you.
And how good having crowds back at Flemington too, Daniel? Must be looking forward to that.
Yeah, I've sort of ridden without crowds for almost sort of 3 years now. We rode in Singapore for a long time and COVID hit over there and crowds stopped almost immediately. So haven't seen a lot of crowds. It's going to be interesting. I sort of like to just keep to myself and get on with things myself. But, unselfishly, it's much, much better for everyone to be able to go and enjoy.
Has it been a little bit eerie? You've probably gotten used to it. But initially, was it eerie with no crowds?
Yeah, definitely. I think... The most eerie part, obviously Singapore crowds are quite vocal, but the most eerie part was riding in a Melbourne Cup last year with no crowds. That was bizarre, you know. I think everyone's itching to get back to the races. 5,500, I think, on Saturday's great. It'd be nice if we were 100,000 deep again, but hopefully we're not far off that again.
Yeah, well, what we're both on this show hoping for is that you return with three more Group 1 wins under your belt when you leave Saturday. That stubby might taste just a little bit nicer. Daniel, well done on the newfound success in Group 1s, and let's hope it continues on Saturday. Thanks so much for coming on.
No stress, guys. Thanks for the support.
Daniel Moore there, jockey on Forgot You, the $2 favourite. He's got Ingratiating in the Coolmore. He's got Sierra Sue in the Empire Rose, who's already had a Group 1 win this spring. He has had an amazing run of form. More Sports Day with Matt Granlin after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. More coming up with Matty Granlin. But first, it's time for news headlines with Tony Tardio. It's thanks to Sutton Tools.
Good evening. A child has been attacked by a dog at Corio. Paramedics have taken the girl to Geelong University Hospital with what's believed to be serious lower body injuries. Her condition is not known. Australians will be able to receive Pfizer's COVID-19 booster shot from the 8th of November. The nation's drug regulator has approved the third dose for people aged 18 and over. Aged care residents and frontline healthcare staff will be first in line. Premier Daniel Andrews says no unvaccinated tennis player will be allowed to play at the Australian Open. He says he's not concerned about any pushback from Tennis Australia. $180 million will be put towards the first phase of Australia's national plan to combat child sexual abuse. Part one of the strategy will be driven by 2 4-year action plans. They're designed to provide better protection for children and greater support for survivors. More news at 7.
Time now for a sports update for Tyre Power, Australia's biggest independent tyre retailer, keeping you safe on the roads. Tyrepower.com.au.
I dare say, Darren, that cricket will take a back seat. And I know it's a big statement for me to make in a Cricket World Cup, which absolutely everybody would like to play in. I speak because the team concerned is South Africa, with a history of exclusion and racism. And for this as an issue to still be here and to rear here, well, it's huge.
Certainly is huge. So for those of you who haven't been made aware of it, South African cricket star Quinton de Kock pulled out of last night's win in the T20 World Cup over the West Indies. It's been reported, and we're quite sure that it's prompted by his opposition to essentially an edict that was that the team had to kneel before the game, pardon me, in the, you know, widely understood this gesture against
Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, yeah. Well, for Black Lives Matter and railing against racism, which we all support. Racism in South Africa, as everyone would know, has been a huge issue for decades now, and it has flown on to racism being an issue in South African cricket. Mm. Yeah, it's obviously a hard one to talk about without going in depth around the history. And I've listened to a lot of different commentary on this, Matty, in the last 24 hours, which has been fascinating. But this is an issue that's not going to go away.
The way it all happened was interesting because what happened before the Australian game, players were doing all sorts of stuff. Like, so some before the match were kneeling, some had their
fists in the air.
Had their hands behind their back.
Yep.
And then the South African cricket were embarrassed by that and said to their players, everyone has to do the same thing. Everyone has to kneel. And then de Kock reportedly stewed over it. And he wasn't comfortable with being told what to do, and he pulled out. And it doesn't look like he's going to play at all for the rest of this T20 World Cup.
I got to say, the wording of the statement from South African cricket, I thought, was a real miss. It said here that it was imperative for the team to be seen to be taking a united and consistent stand against racism, especially given South Africa's history. You don't want to be seen to be doing it. It's not that one of those issues, is it?
Yeah. And I suppose the big question is, you know,
rallying against racism isn't something that you want to be seen to be doing.
But the other side of the coin is, should you be told what to do? Like, if you don't feel like you want to do it, should you have to do it?
There's civil liberties at play, I get that.
Yeah.
And everyone's different. But it's just, you either want to do it or you don't, I think. Anyway, more Sports Day coming at you right after this. Nat Fyfe sounds like he's got a delayed start to the preseason. We'll tell you about it next. Welcome back to Sports Day for Red Energy and the new Kia Niro. Nat Fyfe to have a delayed start to pre-season after undergoing follow-up surgery to repair a troublesome right shoulder. That is not good for the Dockers.
Other news out of the West, and I want your opinion on this, is the Premier over there, Mark McGowan, indicating
the Cowboy.
That,
yep.
that they may not reopen their borders until mid-next year.
Oh, Cowboy.
So he's come out and said that he sees a reuniting with Victoria and New South Wales in the first half of next year, whatever that means. So I don't know what it meant. What certainly is not good for the summer sport. So you look at A-League. I think the owner of the Perth Glory came out today and said that he's thinking about tossing the towel in because they're going to have no crowds if that's the case.
Hutchie just bought the Wildcats.
That's right. So if you're a Perth Wildcats supporter or a Perth Glory supporter,
they're just not going to be able to move. I mean,
you wouldn't be buying a membership, would you? And then what about the AFL? They must have some contingencies in place if indeed you can't. I mean, opposition clubs aren't going to fly into Perth anymore and do the testing and the quarantine and all that stuff. They'll just say no.
I mean, if that – it's an interesting question, Matty, because if that is true, what the Premier is saying, Fremantle and West Coast are going to have to hub here.
Yep.
I don't see another alternative.
Yep.
And they're going to have to play home games in not at Optus Stadium.
Yep, for the first
– I mean, we're looking a long way ahead here. But if what Mark McGowan is saying – ends up happening, what alternative is there going to be? Yeah.
No, because clubs...
They have to get 9 games out a weekend. We've seen that the last 2 years. Whatever happens, wherever the game is played, we have to have 9 games.
And the amount of money those clubs, Fremantle and West Coast, will lose. And what about the Ashes? What about the test match in Perth? I can't see that happening.
I think it's going to go to Hobart or Canberra. Just an update in Hound Wars. I think Tom Brown is back from... I think he's back from holiday. That's bad news for Mitch Cleary. It's good news for us on Hound Wars. More sports after this. We're going to chat to Maggie Payne from Country Racing.
It's time for a Country Racing update. The country is back racing strong again. Support local communities and visit countryracing.com.
Welcome back to Sports A. Maggie Payne is our regular here from Country Racing Victoria. The Bendigo Cup was run and won today. We've got Cup Week at Flemington this week, but racing just as strong out in the country. Perhaps even better, Maggie Payne, as we welcome you in.
Well, Sam, you said it, not me. So, looking forward to, obviously, the weather is really spring weather and it's getting us geared up for a big week at Flemington. And getting out to some country racetracks in person. So the Bendigo Cup today just gave us a bit of a sneak peek for that.
Yep, great win by Wentworth. So what's on in the next few weeks, Maggie? What are you spruiking?
Oh, there's lots happening. But the officially get back to the country races is next weekend. You can go to Geelong for the Balan Cup or the Balnarring Picnic. So whatever takes your fancy, whether you like to get a bit more dressed up for the Geelong crowd at Balan, or go to Balnarring, take your picnic chair, take your food, your family, and just sit out on the grass down the peninsula and enjoy a great weekend.
So any restrictions on crowds at those venues, Maggie?
We're pretty lucky at the moment. We're getting up to 5,000. So there's a few restrictions. It's going to be a bit different experience for people that go on course, but thankfully we're nearly out the other side, but up to 5,000. So that shouldn't worry any of those crowd, but we might get lots of people just wanting to go anywhere, so who knows?
Have you been a country race goer, Matty, in your time?
Well, not for the big ones I'm talking about. It's fantastic. It's a great day out.
Nathan Brown, former footballer Nathan Brown, Bendigo boy, took me to the Bendigo Cup one day.
Did he?
Yep. Had a great time there, Maggie. And at the end, I won a Maya voucher for being best dressed, and Nathan wasn't happy.
Oh, gosh, I'd like to see you in your best. I'm sure you would have got fashions on the field. You'll have to get the suit out. But
it's been a while.
He's a sharp dresser, Sam McClure.
It's been a while,
Come to the country races and bring your thongs and your shorts and wear country casual at the country. So
great stuff.
You can get fashions on the field there too.
Thanks, Maggie. Catch you soon.
Thanks, Sam.
Maggie Payne there.
Now, Sammy, when you dress up in your suit and you won the fashions on the field there, are you one of those blokes that don't have the socks on with the shoes? Is that still a thing now, the fact that blokes that get the suit and they don't actually wear socks, they wear the dress shoes with no socks? Is that you?
See, I can't remember that particular day, but I have...
Have you done that?
I have on occasion worn the chino with the suit. But you wear sockettes, Matt. They're little socks. Under the shoes.
Yeah.
If you didn't wear shoes, you'd...
Oh, you're fairly even going to wear socks, don't you? Like real socks, real black socks. You don't wear...
What? Why?
Well,
times change, Matt. You've got to go with it. Don't go against it. Hey, Trevor Nisbet, long-term boss of the West Coast Eagles, had this to say on Triple M about the stand rule. Not often you get players and people in high places at AFL clubs go against rules, I would say. Trevor decided to.
I think it changed the fabric of the game. Look, a lot of people like the standing on the mark, but certainly from an individual point of view, I haven't liked it, and I just don't think we should be taking and changing the rules on such a consistent basis as we have done over the last few years.
I'm actually with him for that part. Yeah. I think we changed far too many rules. I didn't think the stand rule actually helped that much, did you?
No, I didn't like it at all. It's just 17 versus 18 for that split second, and it looked ridiculous. The worst part about the stand rule, which apparently will be in again next year, was when a player was lining up for goal and could just mosey around the man on the mark, and the poor bloke just had to just stand there and watch it happen.
That was Matty Richardson's biggest
and couldn't defend it. I mean, that looked ridiculous. Yeah, I was not a fan of the stand rule, and I think it. You know, the game was quick at the start. It was certainly, I think, a better style of play, but I don't know whether the stand rule had...
Scoring didn't go up.
No, it didn't. I don't think the stand rule had much to do with it.
And then we're talking about... I noticed that there are people trying to get the boundary throw-in, just retired from the game. It was going to be last touch.
Well, Lee Matthews is a big advocate for that. He's cool for that. So he's got a statue at the MCG.
It's Lee. I was just about to fire up on a 60-second rant on how the boundary throw-in deserves its place in the game, and then you tell me Lee Matthews is going.
Yeah, Lee's a big one for that. So he's got a statue. You don't.
No, not sure there's a statue coming anytime soon either. That does us for this Wednesday edition on Sports Day. Geez, good weather coming in Melbourne.
Yes.
30 degrees on Cup Day.
Cup Day is going to be outstanding.
I'll be wearing no shoes Cup Day.
Of course you will be.
I might just be wearing shorts and thongs though as well. Matty, great to have you on.
Thanks, Sam.
Thanks for joining us on this Wednesday evening. We'll see you tomorrow on Sports Day. You are listening to Sports Day. We're powered by Red Energy, Canstar's most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021. That's Red Energy. And for Wilson Homes, they believe in great design, so you love being home. Big hour coming up. The voice of English football, Peter Drury. We've got Melbourne father, son, prospect Taj Woden, the son, of course, of Shane Woden, the Brownlow medalist. Whoa, wonderful. I remember Matty being the headline on the back page of the Herald Sun, I reckon, the next day.
When he won the Brownlow?
I think it was Wonderful. Whoa, Wonderful.
No one expected that Brownlow to be won by Shane Woe Woden.
In fact, that will still go down as one of the more surprising... I'm trying to think of other ones that come up off the top of my head, surprising Brownlow victories.
Brad Hardy probably was a surprising one in 1985.
Dane Swan, when he...
Yes.
In fact, Dane Swan and Chris Judd both won it when the other one was short price favourite.
Yes. And I remember after the Shane Woe Woden, there was all this sort of commentary about remember he used to have the peroxide blonde hair. Yeah,
how could you forget?
And everyone was saying, well, it's because he did the peroxide blonde hair thing and he stood out. He got a lot of the lot of the footy. And then suddenly a lot of players started peroxiding their hair in the following season, hoping to get noticed by the umpires.
He did have a good year.
He did, yeah.
I mean, I know that people say it was surprising, but you can't fluke a Brownlow.
Oh, absolutely
You can't
not.
Fluke a Brownlow over a season, can you?
Absolutely
You can
not.
Fluke a Norm Smith.
Yep.
You can have a blinder of a game.
Yep.
But not over a season, I don't reckon.
Yeah.
Anyway, looking forward to that. Hey, before we get into the Carlton season review, Matty, the to-ings and fro-ings of the federal and state governments on hotel quarantine for tennis players has been one of the more remarkable exchanges that I can remember revolving around a sport tournament.
Yep. And let's be honest, politics came into play here with all of this,
which is what we said on Monday.
Yeah,
it was just a political game.
Yeah, and we spoke about it the previous hour, but you know there was actually a game of tennis being played between Scott Morrison and Dan Andrews over the last 3 days,
and they each had a doubles partner.
Yeah, they
Scott Morrison had Greg Hunt.
That's true.
And Dan Andrews had Brett Sutton. I'm not sure Brett Sutton and Dan Andrews had the best chemistry. They were sort of hitting different types of shots.
Well, that was an unforced error by Sutton, wasn't it? Who came out and said, well, you know, we'll manage it if, they're 14 days. And then you had also...
Was that his player's partner sort of telling him to hit one long, something made him
good
look
cop,
better?
Bad cop sort of stuff?
I think it might have been.
Yeah. But, I mean, look, Dan Andrews can't back out of this now. It's interesting we haven't we haven't heard from Tennis Australia. I would have thought that after Dan Andrews was so definitive today and said it's not happening, they're not coming, that we would have heard from Craig Tyler as to how we're going to manage it, who's not going to come, who's indicated if they had to be if they had to be vaxxed, they wouldn't come. And we still don't know who they are. Novak Djokovic obviously won't disclose it.
No.
And there's only speculation about the others as to who won't come. But there'll be some players that won't come. But that's surprising that I wonder whether they're still trying to wrangle some sort of deal with the federal state government, the Oz Open, to try and get these players here.
Scott Morrison, the Prime Minister, had this to say earlier today.
Well, I have to quarantine for 2 weeks. And just in the same way, a skilled worker who has to come in to fix a boiler or something like that, they can get exemptions to come in and do that. That's an important economic activity, and the same applies here. But they have to quarantine for those 2 weeks if you're unvaccinated. They're the rules.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's, you say they're the rules, Prime Minister. Well, your immigration minister said something different last week, so that was just weird. Greg Hunt then said this.
You can come in if you're double vaccinated. If a state is seeking an exemption for somebody to come in for a workplace program or a similar event, if the state wishes to seek the exemption for the players, not any one particular player, then that would be granted at the Commonwealth level on a major events basis.
Okay, so you've got the Prime Minister and the Federal Health Minister saying, look, the rule is you need to be double vaxxed, but if you want to apply for an exemption, we'll grant it.
Yep.
But it's on the state.
The state.
To what rules you got to follow. This was, in your analogy, the game of tennis.
Yeah.
This was the federal government smashing the ball straight back at the state government.
Straight down the line.
Straight down the line. And it led, ultimately, to the Premier had to make a call.
Yep.
Was he going to lob one back? Or was he going to go for a winner or end the point? He said this.
Well, I'm not applying for any exemptions for any unvaccinated players. So if we don't apply for an exemption, then no exemption will be granted. All I'd say is this. I'm not going to ask and actually require people sitting in the grandstand, people working at the event to be vaccinated while players aren't. So we're not going to be applying for an exemption. So therefore, the issue is basically resolved.
That's it. The point is over.
Done. It's finished.
The issue has been resolved.
I just wonder, as I said in the previous hour, whether there is a loophole here. Now, listen to this. Can New South Wales apply, or another state where there could be a warm-up event, apply for players to come in? They do their quarantine in that particular state. Like they might quarantine in Sydney for 14 days, or Queensland, or Adelaide. Well, then they're clear then. They're in. They're into the country. They're clear. They've done their 14 days quarantine.
But you can't come from New South Wales to Victoria now without being being vaccinated.
But you can, but you've got to do quarantine again, don't you? But they've already done their quarantine.
Yeah, so but I don't think.
We'll have to check that. I wonder if there's a loophole there.
I don't think you can get on a plane domestically to this state. If you're not vaccinated.
Okay. Well, they can't then. I was just thinking whether or not there's some other way that they can get these players in.
Can we triple check that, Lawrence? Yeah. Do a little search on your computer there.
And I'm sure that Craig Tiley and I'm sure that the WTA and the ATP will be looking at all these little loopholes to see whether we can get these players in.
I think he's not coming.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I think that's over. No vaxxed. Is
although I did read a piece today, I think it might have been in the Oz, that said that he may very well get vaccinated. Like, this may force him to get vaccinated.
I don't think so. It'd be a huge about face. Anyway, let's move on, Matty. The Carlton season review. We're doing our season review, our club season review, a little earlier tonight. The Blues finished 13th, 8 wins and 14 losses. And the off season they bring in George Hewitt from Sydney, Lewis Young from the Dogs, and the big one, Adam Chera from the Dockers. They lose Sam Petrescu-Seaton, who goes back west.
Yep.
And they'll take one pick in the draft, which will be 25. They've got 64 and 82, which you think they won't use. Initial thoughts on the Blues?
I like them. I like where Blues are at. Yeah, I think they've got all the tools. They've got everything there. They just have to. Well, they've got all the ingredients to make a beautiful cake. They just have to have a chef that can put it all together. And I hope for Carlton's sake and Carlton fans' sake, like you, it's Michael Voss. But I think they've got it all. They've got it all there. It's just a matter of putting it all together.
Squid Games, we play green light, red light. We start with a positive, Matt. Thank you, behind the glass, Matty Granlund.
Oh, there's a couple, but I'm going to say Sam Walsh. I mean, to have the season that he had is just extraordinary.
He's nearly won the Brownlow.
Well, he'll be one of the favourites to win the Brownlow next year. I mean, he is just an extraordinary talent. Mackay is another one, obviously, is a green light, but I'm going to say Sam Walsh because I love watching him play.
Have you ever seen in all your times of covering and calling footy, Matt, a player as young, look as well equipped?
Joel Selwood's the only one that comes to mind when Selwood's he first good, came man. Into the competition in 2007, I'm going to say.
Different kind of player, but he had as big an impact, didn't he?
Yeah, he was. He hit the ground running, but I mean, his season and the way he started his AFL career is nothing short of extraordinary.
And the negative?
Red light!
I'm going to say Patrick Cripps.
Yeah.
He just did not, for whatever reason, didn't fire. Now, whether it was injury, we heard it was injury early doors, whether he didn't get along with the coach and fell out there and then lost a little bit of a passion for it and a lot of bit of, I think there was a lot of talk around his contract all year as well.
Yep.
But he can play so much better. And he's got a, I think the other thing that I'd like to see Patrick Cripps do, and we say this every year, is to go forward and hit the scoreboard. I mean, he could, you know, for his size, I'd love to see him, you know, with Walsh now in there as probably their best midfielder, and then Chera coming in and Paddy Dow. I mean, they got that midfield. I'd love to see Paddy Cripps go forward and hit the scoreboard, kick some goals, because he's certainly capable of taking a mark, whether or not he can convert. But I think there's some upside in him under Michael Boss.
Interesting to see what he does with his body this year, Paddy Cripps. He's toyed with getting lighter and quicker and more agile into putting weight back on and being the brute that he was. Andrew Russell's obviously got the best record of being able to do that from a physical perspective. So, I agree with you. Huge year for Paddy Cripps.
And the other one is Zach Williams as well. I mean,
had a shocking year.
It was shocking. And look, when you spoke to people at GWS about Zach Williams, and we all probably did when he moved to Carlton, they said the same thing, that he'd have an exit meeting, and he'd say, "I'm going to come back. I'm going to train over the summer. I'll come back in tip top shape," and he'd come back every season overweight.
Yep.
And then he'd be chasing his tail, and that's exactly what happened.
And
at
when
Carlton
you're on
well.
$800,000 a year, there's no excuse for that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no excuse for that for a $300,000 player, to be honest.
No.
But it's just, yep, he was really disappointing. Let's hope he turns that around. The three key questions. A finals only a pass mark for Michael Voss? Good opening question.
Yeah, very good opening question. No, I don't think so. I think when you're a new coach, you get a little bit of a grace period. I don't think... I know Carlton fans are...
This might be Man United sort
It might
of
be. It could be Man United
stuff.
You get
about six games, I reckon.
but... Yeah, get rid of Voss. I don't know why we got him. Why didn't they get Ross? I can see. I can just hear. I can do the talkback calls before they even come.
Yeah.
Sam, I've taken so many over the years. But
Sam from Richmond's a liar. Yeah.
Sam, yeah. But, yeah, I think he gets, yeah, if he just falls short, I reckon he gets a year's grace.
Okay. You talked about him before, but the chances of Cripps getting back to his best. I mean, this is an interesting question because the line that he said for himself, or the bar that he set for himself, rather, was so high that the next year was a natural letdown.
Yeah.
Then we had last year, which is, well, what maybe that breakout year was the aberration.
Yeah. I think under a new coach, you see players lift again. And I just get, I don't know, I get the feeling just with a couple of things maybe David Teague said towards the end of the season, and even David Teague's manager said about Patrick Cripps, Liam Pickering, that they fell out.
Which is an extraordinary thing for a manager to say, really.
Absolutely. And I just reckon new coach, new environment, you know, he'll be on his best behaviour, and I reckon he'll have a pretty good year.
Okay, I might have a crack at the final question. How important are fringe players like Dow and O'Brien for this side improving? I think it's a really interesting question. I think Dow could be, I'm not going to say Dow could be anything because I don't think he can be, say, Paddy Cripps or Sam Walsh, but Dow can be a 200-game AFL player that spends a lot of time in the midfield and goes forward and does different roles. He tags a little bit. He plays breakout roles. I think his improvement is significant to the side. And Lachie O'Brien's just been absolutely butchered from a coaching perspective since he got there. He's a hard-running guy that almost runs the beep test out outside wingman that has been used maybe 25% of the time in senior footy on the wing. They tried to turn him into an inside midfielder, which is just one of the more extraordinary things I've seen at AFL level. And then when they brought him back after playing 6 weeks in the midfield, they played him on the wing.
Yeah.
He's just been misused. And I'm not saying that Lachie O'Brien was a great pick at pick 10 or whatever he was. I think it was 10. But he's an AFL footballer, and there's no doubt that someone, if it's not Carlton, will get the best out of him. So I hope Michael Voss can see that. Okay, the unders and overs. They won 8.5. No, sorry, they won 8 games. Didn't have a draw. They won 8 games this year, Matty.
Yep.
I'm setting the line at 9.5.
9.5. I think they'll go over.
I do as well.
Yeah, I'm going to say overs.
Yeah.
They had a shocking year. Let's be honest, this year. So, no, I'm going to say overs.
Harry Mackay, and the man of goals, he will kick the Coleman medalist. He kicked 58 this year. I'm setting the line at 60.5.
He missed 3 games, you got to remember,
he
too.
Did, yeah.
Look, he's a star, Harry Mackay. I'm going to go overs.
I'm going overs as well.
Comfortably.
Really? Because not many blokes kick sort of 65-plus these days, do they?
And he has a lot of shots at goal. He misses a lot, too. Yeah. So if he can get his goal kicking right, I mean, what was his conversion? It was something like he'd have
50, would, low 50s.
Like it'd be like 2, 3, 5 a game or something. Yeah. So he'd be having like 8 shots a game. So if he can get that right, I reckon well overs.
And the new look midfield as well with Chera coming in, if they get better ball to him too. An amount of Brownlow votes for Sam Walsh. He polled 30 Brownlow votes last year. So let's just basically to set the line there.
Yeah.
29.5.
Yeah, overs. Of course, overs. We talked about this last night, and the midfield is getting so many possessions.
30 votes is so many.
If they have 8 wins and he's getting, 30 votes in the Brownlow, if they win 10 or 11, he's getting over 30 votes. He's almost winning the thing.
Okay. I'm saying overs just because I can't believe that he'll go worse, to be honest. And I'm going to create one last little question here. In fact, this is what I think is Carlton's season in a bottle.
Okay.
Next year. If Charlie Curnow plays 16 games or more, they'll make the 8 comfortably.
Yeah.
If he plays less than 10 games, I think they'll struggle. I think that Charlie Curnow, and to talk about getting back to his best, I think Charlie Curnow at 80% is in the top 5 forwards in the comp.
Yeah.
Just for what he can do versus what others can't do. And he also really helps Harry Mackay because people start worrying about Curnow. So I think he's their most important player.
I don't know. You would know more about his body. Is he right? Is his body broken?
I'm not sure.
Can he break down again?
I'm not sure he's ever going to have the movement that he once did. But you still saw some stuff after no training in games late last year where it's just like, oh, my goodness.
We just hope we don't get that email.
No,
tweet
no.
saying
I'm not coming in that day if it happens.
Yeah, saying that he's going to take 5 or 6 weeks out of the game.
Lawrence, if that happens over the summer, I will not be found. Okay, Peter Drury is going to join us next to talk all things EPL.
Shots is one way, Salah's the other. He's on an Old Trafford hat trick here, Mo Salah. And he captures the moment. The match is extraordinary. The scoreline is extraordinary. That picture will be framed and kept forever by Liverpool fans all over the world.
Never get as bad as that today. As bad as it's been in this fixture or as distances there have been between the two clubs over maybe 40, 50 years. It's always been a tight game, more often than not. And today, that's a shocker. An absolute shocker. The timing couldn't have been worse.
There is Gary Neville, and at a shocker after Liverpool's 5-0 drubbing at the hands, or 5-0 drubbing of Manchester United. The other voice you heard in there was the work of our next guest, Peter Drury, the voice of English football, joins us on Sports Day. Peter, thank you very much for your time.
Good day to you. How are you doing?
Very good. What was it? Well, you were calling it, and you captured the moment brilliantly in that goal, and also post-match. I heard your commentary as well, Peter. But what was it like being there and commentating and watching that unfold?
Remarkable. It is one of those games that is going to echo down the ages, I think I said at the time. You know, It's just unthinkable that Manchester United can lose 5-0 at home to Liverpool. It just doesn't happen. It shouldn't happen. It mustn't happen. The worry for Manchester United is that it wasn't a fluke. You know, Liverpool were 5 goals better than them. And when you are the biggest, most famous club, certainly English club in the world, that is a problem.
Well, let's have a chat about the manager, and it's a problem for the manager, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Where is it at the moment? What's the latest on his status as the manager?
Well, I'm obviously it's sort of breakfast time over here in the UK as we speak, and I've just sort of started reading some of the morning papers, and don't you worry, it's still very much top of the agenda. And the word is that he is going to remain the Manchester United manager, at least until the weekend. Manchester United play at Tottenham on Saturday. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is expected to be in charge. But it does sort of feel as though we're into a sort of match-by-match scenario now. You know, it's almost as if, despite having been in charge for nearly 3 years, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is going to have to prove himself on a weekly basis. Whether or not that's true, I'm not certain, because, you know, there's so much gossip, there's so much noise around this that it's hard to pick out reality from supposition and so on. But that certainly feels the way. And it's not surprising. I'm sure you're the same. I don't feel very comfortable talking about a human being who's in a job, and none of us would like that if it was us who was the subject of the conversation. But that was such a catastrophic result that it's really not surprising that these sorts of conversations are happening.
And it's going to be tough coming up. As you said, Tottenham, they've got a pretty tough patch. Tottenham away, then Manchester City, Chelsea, plus Watford in amongst all that. So it's not going to get any easier for him.
No, I think actually possibly the really big one is, because it's always big, is the Manchester City game. And not just because it's a derby, but because it's a game that's followed by a fortnight's international break. And I wouldn't quite use the word traditionally, but it's quite customary for clubs, if they're going to make management changes, to make those changes during those breaks, because there is a gap, there's time to get one out, get one in, and move as seamlessly as is possible into the next phase. So I think these next three games, Tottenham, Atalanta, and then Manchester City, are the ones that will indicate whether he has a longer-term future.
And it's not, I mean, this isn't a one-off. They've been in poor form, as you said. Has he lost the locker room? Has he still got good relationships with the players? What's that dynamic like?
Well, again, you know, it depends what you read and what you believe. Because it's such a big club, it's such a soap opera club, Manchester United, that you get you get any number of rumours coming out. I think, broadly speaking, the players, from what I understand, still absolutely like him, respect him, and want to do well for him. So in those terms, added to the fact that he is a club legend, I think there's a fair bit going for him. But the players also were the ones out on the field who performed in the way they did the other day. And there are obviously two dimensions. One, their own performance. And two, the extent to which they seemed at times so disorganised. And of course, that's a coaching issue. Mm. So throw those two up in the air and make your own mind up as to which you feel is the sort of more prevalent cause for such a terrible overall performance. But I don't think he's lost them. I don't think he's lost them. I think they want to do well for him. Whether it's working or not is, of course, another question.
It's interesting. He signed, I think I'm right in saying, he signed a three-year contract in the summer. His assistant, Mike Phelan, was given a contract earlier this month. So, I mean, they had, you know, the administration at least, had some long-term plans for him to stay. I know sports, sometimes contracts aren't worth the paper they're written on, certainly here in Australia as well. But for a big club, for Man U, what sort of agreements and payouts? I mean, if he's just signed a three-year deal, essentially, what sort of payout, if they cut him, say, you know, in the next fortnight, what sort of payout are we looking at?
I don't know. I'm not avoiding the question. I simply don't know the answer. What I would say is that you can feel sorry for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer in human terms if he loses his job, because it'll be a truly upsetting time. But don't worry, he will be able to afford his next meal. the payoff would be obviously substantial. I mean, his contract would be worth hundreds of thousands, millions, no doubt, of pounds. So he would, if he were sacked, I think he'd become a very wealthy man, if he's not already. But the fact that they gave him that 3-year contract indicates clearly, as we all knew anyway, that they really, really wanted it to work,
yeah.
You know, and they really believed it was going to work. And the fact that he is still in the job now and they are taking him to another weekend and hoping that somehow Manchester United can turn it round, the fact that all of that is the case suggests that they're really desperate to give it every chance to work. So there you go. You know, Manchester United, for all their wealth, don't want to pay off a contract if they don't need to. And so they're stretching it, I think, as far as they possibly can and crossing their fingers and hoping for the best.
And I've asked about all the stakeholders, the players, the administrations and the owners. What about the fans, Peter? How are the fans feeling about this?
Well, the fans are a remarkable lot, really. Those who stayed in the ground right until the very end on Sunday were singing his name and screaming madly for Manchester United and demonstrating in a very overtly determined way that they were good fans of a big club, and even at 5-0 down to Liverpool, they're not going to turn on them. And I don't think anybody has really turned on him in the ground, because that's sort of something Manchester United fans take pride in, is staying with the team. Having said which, you know, the boos at the halftime whistle were pretty audible. But the shocking images for United would have been those overhead pictures that I dare say you saw of very soon after halftime, hundreds, thousands of fans just screaming away. You know, that will not play well in any boardroom. To see the punters screaming away. And of course, because it's a global club, you'll understand this, the United crowd is very much a mix. There are the hardcore, there are the local people, there are tens of thousands of people who go to every single home game and a Manchester United home and away, but also it's very much a tourist club too. You know, people, there would have been people in the crowd there for whom that was a once in a lifetime trip. You know, they're big moments of seeing their club, Manchester United. You know, if you go to New York, you watch the New York Knicks. You know,
well, they've got something to talk about, haven't they?
Yeah, so they certainly have. And so, yeah, exactly. That's true. They do have a story. But I saw one or two interviewed actually afterwards, and you think, oh my goodness me, you know, you're 50 years old. You waited all your life to go and see Manchester United play once in the biggest game of all. And you see the greatest catastrophe of all. But there you are.
Peter, before we let you go, I'll put you on the spot. Ollie, will he be there this time in 2 weeks?
Oh, that's a... Well, I'm sorry to give such a dull question, but I really do think it depends on the results of the football matches. And you know what? I quite fancy them to win at Tottenham next Saturday. That'll come back and bite me, won't it? when they have another miserable day. But I think I wouldn't be surprised, because he has a knack, Ollie Solskjaer. Every time he's been quite near the edge, he's picked one out and got himself a big result. So I'm nervous about saying it. I have no knowledge at all, nor does anyone actually, because it all depends on the outcome of 1, 2, 3 football matches. But I think, based on precedent, I think there's a good chance he will still be in the job.
Well, it is the biggest story probably in world sport at the moment, Peter, and you're right there in the middle of it. Thank you very much for having a chat to us tonight.
Really good to talk to you.
Good on you, Peter. Peter Drury there, the voice of English football. And if you haven't heard Peter's commentary of that day, that unbelievable result with Liverpool 5-0 beating Man U, go on YouTube or Twitter and have a listen. It was outstanding. More Sports Day coming up after the break. Welcome back to Sports Day. It's powered by Red Energy, awarded Canstar's most trusted energy retailer nationally in 2021. That's Red Energy. And for Wilson Homes, they believe in great design, so you love being home. Well, Woe Woden is a name we know well. Shane Woe Woden, of course, the 2000 Brownlow medalist, played for the Demons, played for the Magpies as well. His son, Taj Woe Woden, is very much maybe going to Melbourne, I reckon. Father-son prospect. He's waiting with bated breath, and he joins us on the line. Taj, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
How is it, Taj? I mean, I suppose you just want it all over and done with. It's a bit of a wait, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit of a nervous wait. I'm sure that's like for everyone. It's just a full month after the combine and all that sort of finish and the rest of the games. But, yeah, just got to keep yourself occupied and keep your mind off it, I think.
So you are eligible, obviously, to go to the Demons as a father-son prospect. Are you confident? Have you spoken to the Demons? Where is all that at?
Yeah, so I've talked to the Demons throughout the year and towards the end of the back end of the season and that sort of thing. And, yeah, at the moment it's just a waiting game pretty much. We'll look to see and hear from them probably towards the end of the month and then leading into the draft. But at this stage it's just all up for grabs pretty much.
And they were over there, obviously, the Demons winning the flag in Perth where you are. So did you get to sort of meet Simon Goodwin and spend a bit of time maybe with a few of the Demons players when they were over in Perth for such an extended period?
Now, it was a bit hard with them being in a little bit of a bubble for that time they were here, but went to the grand final, obviously, and that was pretty special. But, obviously went to the games and saw some players afterwards in the rooms and that sort of thing. But, yeah, just kind of moseyed around a bit.
What do you like as a player, Taj? No doubt you've had a look at how your dad played and you've seen tapes and you watched him growing up. Are you like your dad? How would you describe yourself as a player if you sort of likened yourself to someone else?
Yeah, probably a bit different to Dad. I'd like to model my game more off a steel side bottom and a Mitch Duncan who can go inside and outside, pretty versatile and clean, and use both sides of my body as well.
It's interesting. I had a look at your numbers. So you went from last year, 12 disposals, 2 tackles, 2 marks across last season to 23 this season, 5 marks, 5 tackles, and you went with 9 goals for the season. So you really stepped it up. How did you sort of improve such rapidly? I mean, what did you work on over the summer?
Yeah, that's a big thing. Just over summer, I did some off-season and pre-season external training program outside of my own club sort of thing, just try to nail down a few more things to do with my power and my endurance and that sort of thing, just to make sure I was ready for the season and had a good base of fitness and that sort of thing leading into the games.
And what about your dad? Does he get involved much? Is he a nervous watcher? Obviously, you had the draft combine. Was he there with you? Does he go to your games? How is he as a spectator of you?
Yeah, obviously, really encouraging. He gets to my games all the time, gets to them as much as he can. Loves seeing me play. But he probably just gets as nervous as I do pre-game and all the other things that go on, like the combine. But yeah, he loves to watch on and just support me through my journey. So he's been really good to me. And this last year especially.
I suppose one of the good things about you guys over in WA as opposed to, Victoria, where it was locked down, is you've actually played consistent footy for the last couple of years, Taj. So that would be a real advantage.
Yeah, we've been really fortunate, actually, to be able to play games over the last couple of years, and it's probably helped us WA boys a lot. But at the end of the day, whatever happens with us WA boys. So, yeah.
So with the draft, Taj, do you pin all your hopes on the Demons and hope that you get picked up father-son, or are there other irons in the fire? Do you talk to other clubs as well?
Yeah, I've talked to other clubs throughout the year. But, yeah, it would be a dream to go to Melbourne. I think that's the main top sort of goal. But whatever happens at the end of the day. And if I get an opportunity on an AFL list, I'll be super excited and go with both hands.
Well, Taj, congratulations on your career so far and even making it to this point and being considered for the draft. And, mate, all the very best for the draft. And maybe you'll end up at the Demons. It could be another club, mate. But all the very best and thank you very much for having a chat to us.
Appreciate it so much. Thanks for having me on.
There he is, Taj Woden. Write that name down. The son of Shane Woden. Might be another Woden playing for the Demons in 2022. He's a Melbourne father-son draft prospect, and I reckon he's a big chance of going to the reigning premiers. So we'll take a break. We'll come back, and we'll wrap it all up after this. Welcome back to Sports Day, all powered by Red Energy, awarded Canstar's most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021. That's Red Energy. And for Wilson Homes, they believe in great design, so you love being home. Earlier tonight, we caught up with the chief executive of the Melbourne Football Club. They have a big, big party coming up December 5 at the MCG, and Gary Peart was telling us all about it. Let's take a listen.
Hey, Sam and Matty. Well, I can guarantee you right up front I wasn't at the nightclub.
Oh, that's disappointing.
That they were talking about. But, no, from all my reports, it's absolutely blown out of all proportions. But like all these things, you don't like tipping water on them, because these are the stories that just keep on growing as the days go on. So, but unfortunately, this one was a bit of a beat up.
There will be a documentary at some point, Purdy, down the track, you know, 10 or 20 years down the track, and it'll all come out. All the names will come out.
10 or 20 years? Purdy's already commissioned the documentary. It's getting filmed next year.
And it'll be a sportsman's night story down the track. But anyway, Purdy, let's have a chat about the big celebration that you got planned. I think it's December 5, the date, yep, at the MCG. So have you worked out what it's going to look like?
Well, we've got a bit of an idea what it's going to look like, but again, it's all going to be shaped by the state government, and you know, we'll be applying or in the process of applying to be allowed to have a crowd at the MCG and allow all our supporters to come along to be the first chance we've had to get the players and the cup and get all together and celebrate, and you know, it's going to be very exciting. But again, we do need to go through a little bit of process. We've asked everyone to keep that date spare. And as soon as we've got the details, we'll come out with them public. But it will be a ticketed event. It won't cost anything, but it'll be a ticketed event. I'm sure we'll be bound by some COVID guidelines about how everyone needs to behave and vaccinations, and we understand that. But we're all pretty excited about getting together.
Purdy, can I give you an idea for it? Because I'm an ideas man. I reckon what you should do is, right, get all the fans there, replay the whole game again on the big screen, and then reenact the cup presentation. Bring out the dais.
Oh, I like it.
Bring Gary Lyon back to present the cup. Get the players up to get their
Craig
medals.
Willis
get Craig Willis out of retirement. Basil Zemplis, we won't fly him back over to the MCG. Goody can have his speech finally. He can say thank you. Just reenact the whole thing.
Well, Matty, I might put you on our little working party on that one. I think that's a good idea. But Goody was very excited to do his speech and thank all the key people. So this could be the big opportunity. But rest assured, for the supporters coming along, the players will be represented. And I would suggest Gary Lyon will be there doing exactly what he did over in Perth. And there'll be plenty of speeches, and you'll get to hear from the players, and there'll be entertainment up on the big screen, just like you're talking about. It's going to be a fun day, and like I said, we'll want all the supporters to come along, especially the families and the kids. First time to see the cup and experience this this premiership celebration, so the 5th of December.
The 5th of December, Gary's a Sunday. I tell you what it would do, Matty, is that it would give all those Melbourne fans a chance to pack down Swan Street on the way out, and people pouring out of the corner hotel, red and blue everywhere. It'd be this mini sort of grand final feel to it.
Be fantastic.
In December. How good would that be? And it'd be better weather as well. Hey, Purdy, can we just ask you, now that the dust has settled on what was a momentous occasion for your proud footy club, what does it do for you heading into next year, sponsorship-wise, membership-wise? It feels like this club has been a sleeping giant for so long. We saw what happened to Richmond when they broke through and won a flag, and now they've got more than 100,000 members. I'm not sure. You tell me if the Demons are capable of getting to those heights. But there are a lot of Melbourne fans who will be brought out because of this.
Yeah, I don't think I'm careful to use terms like sleeping giant, but there's no doubt that as a club, we haven't had ongoing on-field success. So we're, let's say, a small version of ourselves of what we're capable of being. And, the Demon spirit has been reignited. And you've only got to go around Melbourne. You guys are over there in Perth, and we saw it in Adelaide, wherever we played. There's a lot of excitement. There's a lot of Melbourne supporters. There's a lot of people up and about and wanting to, like you said, sign up for memberships. Come along to the games, make sure they're at the events. They're all wearing the colours around. I love the fact that even though the game's over, I still every single day see people wearing their Melbourne gear around. They're feeling very proud at the moment. So it'll be interesting the next 12 months to see what the club is capable of swelling to. And that's why we want to have the first game of the year to be a replay of the grand final, because we want to see not only the Melbourne supporters but the Bulldog supporters as well come along to the MCG and actually experience the two teams that are both, you know, in they've got very talented young groups, and hopefully they're going to be continue their success next year. But in some ways, it's been so long, we don't know how quickly that momentum will grow. But we'll certainly be doing a lot of work to be the biggest and strongest version of ourselves. And the Melbourne Footy Club has been, you know, one of the powerhouse clubs for a long time. And now there's a lot of excitement. Like I said, that demon spirit certainly back and around the place, which is a lot of fun.
What's a premiership worth revenue-wise, Purdy? Can you put a number on it when you combine all the merchandise that you sell off the back of it, membership next year, all the corporate packages you'll sell off the back of it? Can you put a number on it?
Oh, look, well, if we hadn't have played in the finals and won the grand final, we wouldn't have made a profit this year. We probably would have at best broke even. And we might end up around about the $1.5 to $2 million this year. And then next year, as hopefully the membership grows and we play in some big blockbuster games and the supporters come along and want to be part of it, there's a chance that there's probably another $2 million upside next year. And these are all really important numbers for us, because we're coming off the back of 2 years of the pandemic where we've been really, you know, smashed financially to the figure of around about $8 million. So it's coming at an important time.
There is Gary Pearke. Get your tickets, Melbourne fans. December 5 at the MCG. The Cup will be there. And all the stars will be there as well. Should be a great day for D's fans. That is us done and dusted. Don't forget, we'll make the continued talk around the unvaccinated tennis players today's APCO Hot Topic. APCO's win a camper van over 20 grand in prizes to win on now at APCO. We'll talk to you again tomorrow night.